This week, we hear from part two of Darren A. Lehner's exposé on Whither Are We Traveling? Can we expect Freemasonry to retain its past glory and prestige unless the level of leadership is raised above its present position? Darren has a unique perspective on this, having been a master of a couple different lodges in a great mix of both city and rural lodges. You're not going to want to miss it. Then we hear from illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison in an all-new Masonic Minute. Who is Elvis Wingo? Well, in short, a Masonic Superman. You're not going to want to miss this incredible segment that outlines one of Freemasonry's gems, a doctor, a child genius, and a whole lot more. Finally, we'll wrap it up with a contemplative exercise on a particular tarot card. Which one is it? The only hint I'll give you is a loss of three, a gain of two, and it's inversed. Put your thinking caps on and stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 528. Straight away, I want to thank our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners, because without you guys, we can't do this show. So I want to thank you guys all in advance. If you're curious on how you can help promote Masonic education and continue this podcast well into the future and make sure that all episodes are always available all the time for all people without having like some premium backlog access, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and see how you can help. Alternatively, there are some things that we offer in our shop as well as lots of other ventures that all come back to support this program. So our thanks in advance. Even if you're just out there sharing the links and things, this is really important too. So I want to thank you guys. If I sound a little different, it's because I got sick. But the show must go on. Before we dive into the education, just want to let you all know that on the 17th, which should be the day after you listen to this, I'll be doing The Legend of Adam's Grave. And I'll be doing that as a virtual presentation. And you'll want to check our Facebook wall / Instagram for updates and how to get into that presentation if you're interested. On the 22nd, a Saturday morning event, I will be talking about the Illinois Lodge of Research and the value of research lodges in general for a virtual presentation that will be taking place for a lodge in my home jurisdiction. So be sure to check those out if interested. Now, last week we had some great feedback regarding Darren Lehner's piece, Whither Are We Traveling, Part 1, in which he takes apart the original paper, Whither Are We Traveling, by Dwight L. Smith. And so this week we want to go ahead and continue reading his somewhat Generation X take on Whither Are We Traveling. Now, this book hasn't been addressed in years. The latest on this book probably was A Laudable Pursuit, which was done by Brother Christopher Hodapp and the Knights of the North when they addressed Whither Are We Traveling in their book, which I just mentioned, Laudable Pursuit. Shameless plug, you can of course get Laudable Pursuit through Lulu Press, or you can get it on Amazon, I believe. But my lodge, Les Novum, we went ahead and we recorded Laudable Pursuit for Brother Chris Hodapp, and you can get that on audible.com, and all of the proceeds, we just write a check over to the Indiana Grand Lodge and Museum to help fund that. So all that help goes right over there. That's a great place to start. If you've never read that particular book, there's a podcast that we did with Brother Adam Thayer, and it's called the Masonic Book Club Podcast, Masonic Readers Podcast, rather. And the first season is a chapter-by-chapter breakdown of episodes with Adam and I talking about that particular book. So if you're interested in that, that will help you go through it. If you have a little book club or you want to feel like you're part of a book club and you want to read that text. So let's get on with reading Darren's thoughts here. Whither Are We Traveling? Part 2. As we continue to explore Dwight L. Smith's seminal work, Whither Are We Traveling? we begin to explore his answers to the 10 questions he posed for self-examination of the state of ancient craft Freemasonry in 1963. The questions he asked are as important and relevant now as they were then. Question 1. Can we expect Freemasonry to retain its past glory, prestige, unless the level of leadership is raised above its present position? Dwight begins to answer the question with a story he heard about a man who petitioned a lodge, was accepted, and was given his entered apprentice degree. The man never returned to complete his other degrees, commenting that the brethren of the lodge might have felt they made a mistake in electing the man due to his lack of interest. To this, most worshipful Brother Smith echoes the below, quote, "But it was not lack of interest that caused him to go out of the door, never to return. It was disappointment and disillusionment. The performance of the master of that lodge was such that it constituted an insult to the candidate's intelligence, because the head of the Masonic fraternity in that community was careless and sloppy and crude, because he was attempting to do something for which he was not prepared, because he was trying to give quote-unquote good and wholesome instruction on the subjects he knew nothing about. A good man was lost to Freemasonry." On first hearing, that story made a profound impression on me. The more I have thought about it, and the more I have seen it duplicated, the more I am convinced that the number one responsibility for any tapering off of membership, any lack of interest and attendance rests squarely upon the shoulders of our lodge leadership, end quote. Continuing, he makes a point of discussing the men who had served the lodge in the past 100 years as master, and how each of them probably held positions of importance in their community. In the case of my mother lodge, this is somewhat true. The men that formed St. Joseph 970 were the doctors, dentists, bankers, newspaper editors in the community. While many communities still had these in 1963, we have seen not only the number of businesses, and hence business leaders, decrease in small-town America, but we have also seen a number of these positions now being occupied by females who are ineligible for regular Masonic membership. However, he does make a coherent point about many meetings he's attended, and even led as worshipful master, stating, quote, "Looking back on some of the meetings the year I was master, it is a wonder to me the lodge held together. Many of my meetings were such a first-class bore that I would do almost anything to avoid getting trapped at such gatherings today." End quote. He then makes three observations which I will address one at a time. Number one, we must pay more attention to proficiency in the East. We make a great to-do over proficiency of candidates. We want to devise some method whereby new Master Masons may be forced to memorize a set of questions and answers, but we do little or nothing to ensure proficiency where it really counts. A master is expected to be master of his lodge, not a weakling to be pushed around. Theoretically, he quote-unquote sets the craft to work and gives them good and wholesome instruction. Yet, what do we require for election as master? Simply that a brother serve as a warden. That is all. There are no minimum requirements as to ritualistic proficiency, nothing regarding history, symbolism, philosophy, ethics, law, tradition, only a so-called degree for a past master's, which, in far too many instances, is a farce. We elect a master and expect him somehow to become a leader. It never occurs to us to require evidence of leadership first. End quote. Many states require proficiency for someone to be a master of their lodge. I know this to be the case in both New York and Virginia. My Grand Lodge does not require this. Personally, I wish they did. I wish they did because, while I consider myself an above-average ritualist in being able to open my lodge, 1, 2, 3, and close it, I have never conferred a degree. I've learned the ritual, but not being in the practice of conferring them, I do not feel confident in doing so. I've never conferred one because I've never had to. There have always been men that have been able to do so. While I understand this is somewhat of a cop-out, the fact is that necessity is the mother of invention, or at least the mother of anticipation. I've been enabled to procrastinate because there are men that can do the task better than I, and instead of challenging myself, I've allowed myself to focus on other Masonic activities like editing and writing for this blog. However, had this been a requirement to serve as master in my jurisdiction, I believe that I would have risen to the challenge at hand. 2. There is far more to being master of a lodge than the mere recitation of a ritual. We are paying the penalty of years of mass production practices, and a bitter penalty it is, when masters of lodges are so lacking in imagination and vision that they cannot conceive of a Masonic meeting unless a degree is conferred, then we need not expect a revival of interest and attendance, and we need not look for an upswing of membership short of war. End quote. I would 1,000 times rather see as master of a lodge a man who can provide real leadership, a man who can give good and wholesome instruction, a man who comprehends what Freemasonry is all about, even if he cannot confer a single degree. Suppose he cannot recite the ritual, so what? There always are those who are eager and willing to do ritualistic work, but there are precious few who can provide inspired leadership. It is high time we start looking about for the best possible leadership and enlisting the support of men who can lead. But instead, we consider only those who come to lodge, those who stick it out in the endurance contest. We start in line, the man who is on hand, whenever the door is opened, regardless of whether he has even the most elementary qualities of leadership. If the practice of automatic ladder promotion of officers must be discarded in order to obtain the kind of leadership we should have, then by all means, let us discard the foolish custom. There is nothing in the winning of an endurance contest in itself that qualifies a man to be master of his lodge. If the so-called line of officers must be shortened to enable men of ability to serve their lodges, without devoting 6 or 7 years to minor offices, then what are we waiting for? Why not shorten the line? Is it not good leadership for 1 year more important than keeping a seat warm for 6? I agree with Most Worshipful Brother Smith. I do believe that not everyone is cut out to be a worshipful master. I also believe that there are some men that are poor ritualists but fantastic leaders. The ability to lead a lodge is more than knowing the ritual. Many of us can probably name a few times they felt their lodge didn't have adequate leadership due to the master not being ready for the chair. In all honesty, this is where having a progressive line is a failure. The leadership of a lodge should be elected on their good merits, not just because they are the next person in line. This also means that men who are good leaders need to mentor those that are not, so that they can help teach them to be ones in the future. This will also make sure that there is a succession plan in place. It's not healthy to continue to recycle dais officers, but it's better than putting someone in the east that is not ready. I also think that we need to honor the wishes of our members who do not want to be put into a leadership position. I do think that Dwight is optimistic in his thinking that we can find the best man for the job and enlist them even if they are not coming to lodge meetings. If a Freemason can't live up to charges given to him in his degrees, which list the expectation of him to come and serve his lodge, then you're most likely not going to find one that will say yes to becoming master of that lodge. Unfortunately, many of our lodges are going to have a handful of members to choose from unless we address the issues that are keeping men away from coming to the stated meetings. 3. If Freemasonry is to command respect in the community, then the man who wears the master's hat must be one who can command respect. The young teacher who did not return for advancement because his entire conception of Freemasonry was colored by what he saw and heard in the East. The master of a lodge is the symbol of Freemasonry in his community. If he is not a man upon whom intelligent people may look with admiration, then we need not to expect to reap a harvest of petitions from intelligent men. Make no mistake, men judge Freemasonry by what they see wearing Masonic emblems. They judge a lodge by the caliber of its leadership. If we persist year after year in putting our worst foot forward, then we can expect to continue getting just what we are getting now. End quote. On this point, I disagree with Dwight. A Masonic lodge is more than just the master of the lodge. The membership of the lodge is the symbol of Freemasonry in their community. While I agree that men judge Freemasonry by who they see wearing Masonic emblems, the lodge isn't judged by the caliber of its leadership. It is judged by the activity it is performing in the community. as well as the behavior of its membership. If your lodge isn't active in the community, you are not going to attract new membership. Men won't know that you exist because you're not doing anything to attract them. While the master may be the one to set the craft to work and give proper instruction, it is the membership as a whole who are responsible for the labors. If you are not doing anything, then your lodge isn't healthy. In order to be healthy, a lodge needs to be doing things by being present in the community. Poor behavior by membership in social settings, both virtual and real life, can also have a detrimental impact on a lodge's standing in the community. As an organization that has core principles that believe in the equality of man, tolerance of other cultures and religions, being a good citizen, the importance of the liberal arts and sciences and practicing the Masonic tenets and cardinal virtues, behaving contrary to those on social media or in the community is also going to hurt the lodge's reputation in the community. How can we convince men in our community, especially younger men, to join our fraternity when we do not practice what we preach? Authenticity has been shown in marketing studies to be a critical element for how Gen Z evaluates products and resources. If we are not being authentic to our principles and teachings and our own behavior on social media and in social settings, we are only hurting our chances to recruit the men in our communities. Next week, I continue the article with an examination of Dwight's second question, how well are we guarding the West Gate? Darren A. Laners. All right, a great examination of that first question that he ponders here. I think Darren brings some fresh eyes to this mindset. I have some mixed feelings about the master of the lodge and finding a good master and the idea that he is the face of the fraternity. I feel he can be the face of the fraternity if he's, you know, the most active or most important man in the lodge. And maybe this is true if the lodge has perhaps somehow got the president of the biggest bank in the local area to be the master of the lodge. In this sense, there's a almost prestige, almost community celebrity associated with the master of the lodge. And in this case, you know, he very much is the face of Freemasonry. However, because this is a different landscape today, there is no pillar of the community that stands up and, you know, everybody knows that one banker. It's more like we've got individual men in our communities, more like unknown aldermen. And those are the men who we might seek out to be men for our fraternity. And maybe they are men in our fraternity. I know my mother lodge, Waukegan 78, we were fans of giving awards to the aldermen in Waukegan for the works that they would do. And we wouldn't just give it out every year. We would actually look at the accomplishments of the aldermen and see what they were doing in their communities and, award them and do a little speech for them when such a thing happened. Now, this never resulted in our aldermen joining the Masonic fraternity. Unfortunate or fortunate, it doesn't really matter. The point is, we were seen by the aldermen as being a positive force for our community by recognizing the good deeds of the aldermen. Some might say that's political. I don't think it is. I think good is good. Take political and throw it in the garbage. We need to be able to stand up for what's right, you know, just for the humans, for the species, right? In our ritual, it says God made man dependent on each other for support and all other things. So when we see that happening, we should reward it. And maybe that will, by recognizing these traits and recognizing people, allow them to see who Freemasonry is. And maybe they'll join, maybe they won't. But one thing's for sure, we'll be on the right side of history. I'll end my little rant there. I want to ask for the Craftsman Plus cool question. Some might think it's a basic bro question, you know, not diving too deep here or whatever the case might be. I really do want to know. Tell me about a time that your lodge did something extraordinary for the community or its local constituency or the neighborhood in which it resides. Something along those lines. I certainly have a couple examples that I'll put in the Craftsman Plus group as well. Next up, let's hear this week's Masonic Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison.
According to his epitaph, he was a very interesting fellow. His first name is not even on his tombstone. Born in 1934, Elvis Otha Wingo was a young man when another Elvis took the country by storm. I never asked Otha if that was why he preferred to use his middle name, but it might have been. After all, back then, there was only one Elvis. And make no mistake, there was only one Otha. Shortly after being appointed editor of the Missouri Freemason magazine, I learned I had an assistant editor who had held the position for years, never wanting to move into the editor's chair. It was, the Grand Secretary told me, a brother named Dr. E. Otha Wingo. A couple weeks later, I went to our Grand Lodge communication and found him in the cavernous hall where we hold the plenary session. We introduced ourselves and had a lengthy conversation about the magazine, Freemasonry, and a few other things. I learned he had earned his PhD at the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana, and for many years had been professor of ancient Greek, Latin, and mythology at Southwest Missouri State University. As the hall began to fill for our meeting, Otha excused himself from our conversation to attend to another duty. Already impressed by this obviously brilliant brother, I was stunned when he walked over to a piano, sat down, and began playing. He had neglected to tell me he was an accomplished pianist and served as the musician for our grand sessions. This man, I thought, is my assistant editor. I should be his assistant instead. As assistant editor, Right Worshipful Brother Wingo only had one job. For years, even before I became a member, he wrote a column to improve myself in Freemasonry, which always appeared on the back cover of the magazine. The back page column, as it was known, and Otha himself were both icons to our Grand Lodge members. Over all the years I knew him, I came to realize our first conversation didn't tell half the story. Otha grew up in Boonville, Mississippi. The son of Elijah and Edna Gooden Wingo, his parents were sharecroppers who could barely scratch out a living during the Depression years of his youth. He developed an early interest in playing the piano. His family could not afford such an expensive instrument, so he took a long strip of cardboard and drew the keys on it, using that to learn to play. At the age of 12, he taught an adult Bible class at Boonville Baptist Church, and 4 years later, at just 16, the child genius was admitted to college, where he studied classical languages. In 1963, his 198-page doctoral thesis, Latin Punctuation in the Classical Age, proved for the first time that the Romans used punctuation in the written Latin language. Otha was initiated September 12, 1966, and spent the bulk of his Masonic life as a member of Harold O. Grohl Lodge 672, where he served as master in 1973. On the charter night of that lodge, Dr. Wingo not only gave a dissertation on the history of the lodge's formation, but also, as the official lodge prognosticator, he told its fortune. His extensive Masonic resume includes serving on many Grand Lodge committees and a variety of positions. He was District Deputy Grand Lecturer from 1998 to 2010. In 2007, he was honored by being elected just the 12th Fellow of the Missouri Lodge of Research, and in 2011 received the coveted Truman Medal from the Grand Lodge of Missouri. The introspective Brother Wingo was president of HUNA Research, a society promoting, in its words, a practical way of life containing elements of philosophy, science, and religion. He succeeded the group's founder, Max Freedom, and served in that position for 40 years. Working as a missionary in the 1950s, Otha hitchhiked across Jamaica. He was a personal friend of Mahalia Jackson, and, as if his life wasn't busy enough, he was a certified private investigator. The articles Right Worshipful Brother Wingo wrote for the magazine were thoughtful, deep, serious, and even sometimes humorous. They all reflected his thorough knowledge of Freemasonry, its principles, and history. As District Deputy Grand Lecturer, he liked to include articles on memory aids to assist brothers in learning the ritual. He never hesitated to drop in information stemming from his deep knowledge of classical languages and mythology. He also confused us from time to time with titles like The Anacreonic Ode and Similimum. I once had the temerity to reject one of Otha's articles. Well, sort of. In 2012, he submitted a column entitled Traditional Observance. T.O. lodges, as they are sometimes called, are much more formal than many of our own lodges. They follow traditional Masonic practices and the original goals of Freemasonry. They usually include Masonic education and discussion in their gatherings. Members almost always dress in tuxedos, focus on the quality of performing the ritual, and usually observe a festive board at each meeting. Sometimes members' attendance, within reason, is required. Otha's article objectively described the origins and practices of T.O. lodges. Like all of Brother Wingo's articles, traditional observance was interesting, perceptive, and educational. It was certainly worthy of publication. However, the Grand Lodge of Missouri bylaws prohibit T.O. lodges. Not just that. Some influential members in Missouri are adamantly opposed to them, claiming, among other issues, they are elitist. I called Otha, and after discussing the issue, we decided it would be better not to publish it. Within a couple of days, the prolific Right Worshipful Brother Wingo sent me a replacement article. In 2015, after a decade as editor of the Missouri Freemason and a decade of working with Otha, I moved on to other projects. When the first edition of the magazine came out under a new editor, I picked it up out of the mail and immediately turned to the back cover to read Otha's column. Something struck me as strange. The format was different. The title of the article was The Back Page Legend. Beneath that were the words, Right Worshipful Brother Dr. E. Otha Wingo, past Deputy District Grand Lecturer, Fellow of the Missouri Lodge of Research, 1934 to 2015. Stunned, I gradually realized I was reading Otha's obituary. I had had no reason to communicate with him since our work on the previous issue. And so the back page of the magazine, the space Otha had owned for years, is where I learned of his passing. Somewhat ironically, it turned out my last edition of the magazine was also his. In losing Brother Wingo, Freemasonry had lost a great talent. A decorated Freemason, known to be a loving family man, an author, an accomplished musician, a scholar, a missionary, Sunday school teacher, and even a private investigator. Dr. Elvis Otha Wingo was indeed a very interesting fellow. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute. Hey brothers, this is Steve Harrison. The Masonic Minute segment that you just listened to mentioned an article called Traditional Observance that Otha Wingo wrote. Well, that article has still never been published. When we decided not to put it in the magazine, I offered to see if we could have it published elsewhere, and Otha gave me the go-ahead to do that, but I never followed up. Until now. I'm just delighted to let you know that tomorrow, the Midnight Freemasons blog will publish that article, Otha's final article, in full. Give it a read. You'll probably learn something new about traditional observance lodges, and you'll also experience the excellence of Otha's writing. For those listening to the recording of this podcast, the date of that article would be January 17th, 2022. Enjoy, brothers.
All right. What an amazing individual this guy was. Elvis certainly checked every box plus some. Childhood genius, all the Masonic accolades, just an incredible story. And thanks to Brother Steve for illuminating this individual who probably all of us had never heard of before. And I can confirm, actually, at the time of listening to this, when we're releasing it Sunday night, 9:30, the next day, which will be the 17th, as Steve said, the article on traditional observance is going live. So check that out. For all of our Illinois Masons in particular, I do want to mention that the latest issue of the Lyceum, the official education publication of the Grand Lodge of the State of Illinois, should be in your inboxes very soon, if not already. If you haven't received it already, then please check the il.mason website. Click on Masonic Education, and if it's not there, you're looking for the January issue, then you can find it for sure on the Illinois Lodge of Research.org. Click on More or hover over More and click on Grand Lodge EDU and just scroll down for a quick second. You'll see the PDF right there for you to download, as well as all past issues. We're hosting them in both spots just to make sure we get, for those who are interested in that, great articles this week, some good book reviews. Really excited about this particular issue, so check it out. All right, I want to make sure that this week we get in a little bit of contemplative practice. I'm not going to be reading a philosophical piece for us this week. So because of that, this is just due to the fact that I am under the weather. But we do want to make sure we check those boxes, because education comes from without and also from within. So in order to do that, I'll give the cards a random shuffle, select a tarot card to think about the modern practical implication of what it's asking us. Now, of course, the tarot is not Masonic, but there are Masonic elements within the tarot. In fact, very heavily influenced, in particular in the way that Freemasons have been for many, many, many years, decades, maybe even a century or more, have been influenced by tarot symbology, and we've kind of gone in and out and mixed around, and it's really interesting stuff. Now, if you've been following along, then you know the issue, but I have to say right up front, for a lot of folks who might be going, listening to this for the first time, going, oh, I didn't sign up for this. This is tarot. This is not masonry. You're right. Yeah, you didn't sign up for this. This is not, masonry. What we're doing with the tarot in these segments is kind of learning some of the symbolism on the card. It's more about symbolism and then reflecting on what that symbol's prescribed meaning is and how it reflects on us today. So masonry calls us to be better by using our consciences as tools to better ourselves, to better who we are. And there's no better way to do that than to reflect on who we are in circumstances that maybe we haven't always thought of in a particular way. So the tarot has a set of prescribed situations and ideologies that we can just pull a card and say, does this apply to us? And if so, how do we handle it? If anything, a contemplative prompt exercise. So that's the way we're using it. It's not divinatory, not cartomancy. We're not summoning anything. It's not evil. It's not even fortune telling. Just a contemplative exercise. So I'm just giving the cards a quick shuffle here. I'm just going to draw one card off the top. We'll flip it over and see what it means. Okay, I got a Five of Cups. Now, traditionally, Five of Cups, the iconography is usually of a dude. He's standing there, and he's kind of lamenting or looking at the ground at three spilled over cups. The liquid is poured out, and two are standing. When we view this card upright, it simply could just equate to something as simple as a loss of three and a gain of two. Maybe three of your friends moved away to college, but you've got two new work friends who show a lot of promise at being close to you, or it could be anything related to how you've gained these things and lost these things. In this case, however, I drew the card inverted. So we all know, if we've been keeping up over the last few weeks, that sometimes an inverted card doesn't necessarily mean the card is now, here's its negative virtues. In fact, it asks us to get a little bit more introspective than a superficial value sometimes. And in the past, we've drawn lots of court cards. This is not a court card. This is just what we call our minor arcana card, which is just like, you know, a Five of Hearts or a Five of Diamonds or something along those lines. It's a Five of Cups. And of course, the iconography suggests a loss of three, a gain of two. But what are those things? What kind of other things does the card symbolize? So we'll post a picture in the Craftsman Plus group. For those of you out there who are not in the Craftsman Plus group, it is a place for the financial supporters of the program. Can get together, talk, share, all that good stuff. However, the picture I'll post, you'll see yellow backdrop for the sky. There's an individual who is cloaked and looking down at his three spilled vessels while his back is to the two that are still there. So could this also mean, you know, you've got a loss but you're forgetting about, or if you perhaps turned your back on the people who are already or still with you? Don't forget about them. So if the card is upright, typically that thing I just described, right? Regret, failure, disappointment, pessimism. But when it's reversed, it asks us to think about personal attacks, or self-forgiveness, or moving on, moving forward in our lives, not forgetting about what still exists. Something else that gives us a clue to the Five of Cups is that there is typically a river and a bridge in the background. Now, the river indicates troubled waters. The bridge indicates a path forward. So when the card is reversed, as in this case, maybe we've suffered some setbacks in our lives, or some disappointments. Maybe there were exactly three of them, right? I don't know. But in this case, it's asking us, have we recently had any setbacks? And in those, if we have we felt like we could have done better? Or have we felt like there was a failure on our part? Have we forgotten to apologize or own up to some mistake? And coincidentally, if we don't communicate with our people that are around us, they might not know that we're in this kind of funk, this pain right now. So it's important to remember the other people who are still with you, who you can talk to, sharing your feelings with other people, to realize so that we can overcome our temporary sadness, our temporary feelings or setbacks. Maybe we're feeling guilty or bad about something that happened, right? Blaming ourselves for mistakes. This is a card that is encouraging us to not only forgive yourself, but move on, right? That's the bridge. Move on. It's okay to move forward, one foot in front of the other. Remember, you know, we say in masonry, off with the left foot, because the left is the weaker part of man. And if you can take that first difficult step, moving forward becomes easier. So when we draw this card, really the takeaway for you, even if everything I said previously doesn't really line up for you, what you should think about is the card here is indicative of you being conscious of all of the ramifications of the past. And you're thinking to yourself, man, I really appreciate the lessons that I learned from all of my past experiences, even if they're painful. It reminds us that we can't undo things. Those things happened. We moved on. And we have new opportunities that are coming to us. We're discovering how to take risks again. And that it's time to really re-engage with your creative nature and move on in having excitement in your life again. Or continued excitement. So that's the card. On a contemplative level for our Craftsman Plus, I'd love to ask this question. Have you recently had a setback? And if so, who helped you get through it? Or what helped you get through it? I'll share my examples in the Craftsman Plus group as well. I hope we can all learn with each other and learn through each other's perspectives. Now, we've got some great episodes that are coming up in the next few weeks. We'll make sure that we have some additional great content coming to you. We've got more Masonic Mythbusters with Worshipful Brother Patrick Day. We've got interviews starting to line up for the year and all kinds of great new exciting things. So I want to thank you guys all for joining us this week on this edifying journey. I want to invite you to check out something that's really cool. You know, I'm not getting any kind of compensation for saying this, but I just think it's a damn cool project, and that is Brother Juan Sepulveda's Secret Society NFT project. So cool. Now, WCY Media and Skull and Crown has NFT collections out there you can find, but I think that the NFT project that Juan has started is so darn cool, you guys. Check it out, Secret Society NFTs. Just Google it. I'll put a link in the show notes to it. I think you guys will think it's pretty darn cool if you guys are into crypto and non-fungible tokens and artworks and things. Really just a super cool project. I'm excited for it. I joined the Discord, so you'll see me over there if you're interested. But anyway, that's it for this week. I want to thank you guys all one more time, all those producers, fellows, and contributors, and legacy partners for making this show happen. You guys are so amazing. And I can't thank you enough for letting me bring the show to you week after week. Again, sorry for the shorter show. Just feeling under the weather. Just have a shorter show this week because of it. So with all that, thank you so much for joining us. Until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.